Choice and Control is a podcast celebrating meaningful inclusion of people with disability in our communities. Brought to you by Carers Queensland, your NDIS local area coordination partner in the community. Each episode provides a conversation space for people with disability, their families and carers, to share their stories with you. We also hear from members of the wider community, local businesses and community leaders who share information, ideas and possibilities to give you more opportunity and more choice and control in your life. In this episode, we feature 41-year-old Hanny Watson from Brisbane, who will be competing at the Paralympics in Paris as Australia's first female para powerlifter in 12 years. Hanny was born with bilateral metaphyseal dysplasia, which bowed her tibia and femur bones, resulting in numerous surgeries and painful recoveries. She was introduced to powerlifting at an early age, yet becoming a Paralympian never crossed Hanny's mind until a few years ago. In 2021, she was classified for the sport and competed at the World Championships in Georgia, breaking an Oceania record and finishing eighth overall at only her second competition. Hanny also broke Australia's 16-year medal drought in the sport when she won bronze in the women's heavyweight at the Commonwealth Games in Birmingham 2022, with a best lift of 127 kilograms. Our interviewer Emily caught up with Hanny before she flew out to Paris and started by asking her how her journey in powerlifting first began.
Well, my dad was a bodybuilder, natural bodybuilder. So I've always been around weights and I've always been curious about weights, and I'd go and hang out in the gyms with him. The old school, like 80s and 90s bodybuilding, where they had like the stringer singlets and the pinstripe tights and all that kind of stuff, those big burly men and all that kind of stuff with the permed hair and all that kind of stuff. So I've always been around it and I've always been fascinated by it, but I couldn't do much leg stuff with him. So he used to teach me how to do a lot of upper body stuff, like sort of dumbbells, with benching and all that kind of stuff. And he said, you know, if you can't do that, then at least you can do the top half. There's no excuses there. So yeah, I would stand there and I'd pick up his barbell and I'd, you know, wiggle the weights off and they'd fall off the ends and I'm like curling it and all that kind of stuff. So there's my earlier memories when I was about six years old. I started doing those things with him and just hang out with him and do that. And then I've always been in a gym of some sort because it's been an outlet for me, I suppose, throughout life, throughout high school, primary school, that kind of stuff, because that's what I could do. I couldn't go running down a track or so. I'd certainly try long jump, or, you know, high jump is obviously not my forte at 5 foot high. But, you know, I'd certainly give it a good old crack, but then it got to a point where I just couldn't do all those sorts of things anymore. And then the surgery started, trying to fix my legs and all that kind of stuff, when I was about 9. So I have a birth defect. It was given a title of metaphyseal dysplasia, bilateral leg. So both legs were severely bowed when I was born. Like, we're generally born with bowed legs, but they grow straight. Mine just got more bowed as I got older. And so they're about 45 degrees bowed, from the femur to the tibia. To me, that was normal. I was normal, and my parents treated it as normal, like just any regular everyday kid. Yes, you know, it wasn't a disability. It was only until I was a bit later on in life when it became like such a huge issue for me, that I was like, you know what, you actually have a disability. There's something a little bit different about you and stuff that And then it was an orthopedic surgeon that sort of, you know, bowled me up. Even though I had many surgeries beforehand, like when I was younger, they actually stopped me from going any taller. They took all my growth plates out when I was younger because I didn't know what was causing the bowing, basically. So that's why I'm so short. So I've got size 10 and a half feet, which would say should be at least 5'10", 5'11". But I'm only 5'1", 5'2", maybe. So, and I always thought, you know, if I was ever to do anything, to fix them, to get them straight again, I'd do that when I was younger. But I got to about 31 and an orthopedic surgeon sort of just looked at me and he goes, "What are you doing about those legs?" And I said, "Nothing. I'm not doing nothing about them." But then he convinced me over about 6 months to basically break them one by one and straighten them, put like massive amounts of plates and screws to hold them together. My left leg, which was my first leg that I got done, was by far the worst journey I've ever experienced in my life. It took about 8 months for the bone to actually grow and for me to basically put any weight through the leg. And then once that was okay enough, I think 10 months later after that, it was then jump onto the right leg and then try and see if we can straighten that one. So it was the same thing, break the femur, break the tibia, straighten it out. The bones were basically, you know, broken in all pieces and put back together again. And then it was about maybe a year and a half after those, both of being done and constant rehabilitation. And well, about a year later, I couldn't walk on my left leg. I lost the ability to walk on it, and it was just like it felt like I'd broken it in so many places, and I had emergency surgery. And they removed the metalwork out of the leg, and then all of a sudden I could walk again, which then said to them my bones were growing back bone again, and they were pushing the metal out, which is not normally what would happen. So they eventually removed all the metal out of my legs and they're just going back bone again. But the end product was obviously all of that surgery and that work failed. And now I live with like severe chronic pain, and I'm now facing osteonecrosis in my knees. So after Paris is going to be quite the journey again. It's hard, isn't it? It's hard. I suppose it's like it's not anyone's fault. No one actually saw or could, you know, sort of see that my legs were going to do what it did. Like it had a genetic disposition to go and do what it wanted to do. And no one could ever predict that. So I don't hold any grudges against anyone, you know, about that. At the end of the day, I always say to everyone, like, the silver lining was I became so disabled enough that I could become a Paralympian. And that's a sick way of thinking about it, but I live with something that's quite horrible. But I get to do something that inspires a lot of people, and it motivates me to constantly be stronger. And I like the sport that I do. I love it, you know. And I see a lot of younger generations coming through now who have gotten some sort of leg disability or something like that, that they like, well, if I can do something on the top half of my body, then I'm not completely written off from life and purpose. It gives them something to look forward to, a bit of hope, you know. So I'll keep doing it until I can't do it anymore, you know. Everything switches off when I'm on the platform. Everything switches off. So when I get ready and I'm at that gate where before they say bar is loaded, I've got 2 minutes. And that's where I sort of, everything comes on and everything's blinkered and everything sort of quietens down. I can't hear anything other than myself, my own breathing, and then my coach's voice. And he has been trained by me to tell me what I need to do and all that kind of stuff and tell me what time I'm up to. And I just keep calm. I just listen to my own breath. I have a little mantra that I go through and I tell myself those things. And I just slow everything down. And the pain that I experience on the platform when I get strapped down, it's only temporary. It is only going to last for only about 30 seconds once I then lift the bar. So once I've left the bar, the press is only like a couple of seconds and I'm done, you know, and it's only temporary. And my body sort of just takes over. It's like a muscle sort of like memory, and it just does its own thing. And I just get up there and do it. And it's probably the one time where everything does switch off and it becomes meditative for me, like it's a form of meditation. And it's just a quiet place, and it's a quiet place of focus for me, and it's exciting. It's at the same time as well, you know.
And what are you lifting? What weight? What size? Is it a?
My best in competition is 138 at the moment, 138. I can press 145. Not comp spec, like the one thing a lot of people look at, it's like, why do so many people fail their lifts on the platform when they watch it and they watch me compete? It's like, it's very specific. It's a very strict sport with its rules. You know, your elbows have got to lock out at the same time. There can't be significant amounts of body movement. You've got to press the, you go to hold the bar on your chest for a minisecond. And your bar's got to be like at a dead stop before you're allowed to press it. You know, you've got command calls by the ref behind you, all sorts of things. Your butt can't lift, your head can't lift, all sorts of things. So as long as you complete all of those, you get a good lift. You know, I think in Georgia, the first lift I had, I clipped, even though I pressed it, I clipped the rack as I went up, and that's a no lift. So, you know.
Oh, just, that's tough. That's quite strict, hey?
Very, very strict, yeah.
So you must have incredible core as well to keep your...
Yeah. You've got to have good core strength, you know, good thoracic sort of stabilization, and obviously good upper body strength and that, you know, and mental toughness. I'll always say it's all about confidence being under that bar. Like, it's all the weight that you're pressing. It's all relative at the end of the day. But if you don't have the confidence, you'll talk yourself out of it and you won't be able to press it. So, well, I actually did normal powerlifting after all my surgeries were done. I needed someone to help me to fix the gait of my legs, to activate the muscles that I have, because they all sit in different positions. So we did the squat and deadlift and that, because we needed that compound movement to press the bones and get the bones to strengthen and to grow. So I did that for a little while until it just all went pear-shaped and sort of my bones couldn't do it anymore. But then I still could do bench. I've always done that sport. I've done it for funsies, basically, but it was only like I said, 3.5 years ago I got picked up professionally to do it. I've always tried any sport that I could do, but it all is leg dominant. I was never really introduced to disability sports or anything else I could possibly do, like track and field. I could have done something like that, but I didn't grow up with it, unfortunately. Kind of wish my parents could have seen a little bit, you know, like that, yeah, I could have done something like that, but I didn't. Well, my parents divorced when I was like 5, so there's one parent that's, you know, very gym focused, and then there's another parent. She made me do archery when I was, you know, younger. But walking those big fields was a tough thing for me. So I'd have to get her help a lot of the time. So I've always done something along the way with my mum or whichever, like that kind of stuff. But again, I always fell back into doing a lot of gym work. And then when I was 15, like my mum had a bit of a psychological breakdown, and then sort of I couldn't live with her anymore, unfortunately. I don't blame her for that, but then I ended up in a share house. I looked after myself, putting myself through high school. My father wasn't around either at that point in time in my life. And in that era of that time frame, like, child safety wasn't a thing that strong for me. I had to sort of just do what I could do to manage. I didn't have much family support at that point. And then the only thing I had was that my high school gave me the key to the gym and said, you are welcome to go to the gym. And I would do that. I'd catch the train and I'd go to the gym at 6 o'clock in the morning and train for a couple of hours. And then I'd go to school and then I'd whack it on home. It kept me focused. That was the principle. Mr. Brennan, he passed away probably about 4 years ago, and I owe a lot to him, because he knew I had a bit of a tough upbringing and that, but he knew that if I had something to have and to do and that kind of stuff, it obviously would keep me on a good path, basically. So I have a lot to thank for him in regards to that too.
Yeah, wow. Man, you've had an extraordinary life, and it's still just starting, really, isn't it? The second half of your...
It's just another chapter that opens up, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. So before so 3 years ago, you had 3-4 years ago, no ambition at all to be a Paralympian.
No, I mean, like, everyone wants to be an Olympian. You know what I mean? We all grow up watching Commonwealth Games and the Olympics and the Paralympics, and I've always watched all of them and had an appreciation for all of them, like Louise Sauvage on the wheelchair racing, all that kind of stuff. But I only got introduced to wheelchairs like 2 years ago, and I'm still fighting mentally about being in a wheelchair, and then sort of giving up that part of my independence to having to be in one more regularly, because I can walk around. That's another thing I have to face, is that some people see me walk and some people don't. You know, it's... But I have to be in my chair more frequently. But I've always grown up around it and understood it and that kind of stuff and appreciation for it. But I never thought ever, you know, if you asked me 5 years ago, would you see yourself at a Paralympics or Commonwealth Games? I would have just giggled at you. And I'm like, whatever, you know.
LAC Connect. It's a new way to stay in touch with your local area coordinator at Carers Queensland with everything you need right here on your device. It's a handy app to keep track of your LAC appointments, browse workshops and events, check out information and support, and get the latest news, stories, and podcasts. It's available on Android and iOS, so whatever device you have, you can stay in touch. Head to our website to sign up at carersqld.com.au and look for LAC Connect.
In addition to being an Australian Paralympian, Hani Watson has been a full-time healthcare worker for many years and uses her natural empathy and personal experiences to help patients in hospital.
Yeah, full-time working. I've always worked in healthcare, administration and AO. Yeah. Always enjoyed working in hospitals and stuff, usually private hospitals. And I was a team leader, manager, that kind of stuff, and just greeting patients as they come in, whether it's booking them in or, you know, discharging them out, and then their journey is, you know, a really good journey. So I always know that when a patient comes in, you're scared, you're anxious, you know, your energy needs to be a little bit different. It needs to be that you're a little bit sort of more heightened aware of being a little bit more positive, because then your outcome is going to be a little bit more different rather than negative. And then your negative energy is going to impact how you recover and all that kind of stuff. So I've always been very passionate about what I do to change a person's mind frame about why they're in hospital or why they're sick, that kind of stuff. I know what it's like to sort of struggle every day, and I could sit here and I could wallow in the pain that I experience and the difficulties I face, but what's that going to achieve at the end of the day? It doesn't achieve anything. It doesn't, you know, it's not anything positive. And I just sort of sit there and like, I can give so much more to myself, and let alone another person, to my friends, my family, that kind of stuff. I've always had that attitude. So I now work in like an emergency department with so we get a lot of patients coming in on a, you know, the ambo trolleys, that kind of stuff, and you can see they're frightened, they're sad, or they could be crying or whatever, that kind of stuff. And I'm the clown that comes along and, you know, asks you, how are you? You doing all right today? And they sit there go, oh, yeah, I'm okay. I say, what's up lying to me? You're here in an emergency. What's going on there? I'll be typing away, you know. And, you know, I catch them out and they're like, oh, yeah, you know what I mean? Like, it's just changing the narrative of why they're there. And it's not all just a sterile environment. It's meant to be sort of like, we're here to help you. And that's what we're going to do from all different levels. You know, from the physical to the mental, that kind of stuff, you know. You want it to be a nice journey. You know, when I started this journey, I was working full-time. But then obviously my disability in the last 3 years has sort of just continued on a sliding scale with my legs. And that's not anything that I've done, but it's just my knees have just started to say no, thank you. And I'm doing everything that I can to sort of like, you know, be conservative, because I'm over surgeries, to be perfectly honest. It's not the answer at the end of the day on some people. If you ask me, I'd like to just chop these legs off and just be done with it and then just move on and just adapt to that lifestyle. But, you know, it's in time. We'll get to what I need to do and that kind of stuff. But I used to work full time. I used to be in a sitting position most of the time, but now I can't do the adjustment of sitting, standing, walking, that kind of stuff. It's just, you know, I have to adjust wherever I go. And now I'm working in ED, where it allows me to be in my wheelchair. So I've been very much supported. And when my mum passed away last year, she said, you know, like, you're going to make some pretty big sacrifices. And one of them was to, you know, really pull back on working and work to what you need. And that's obviously keep a roof over your head, pay your bills and your food and your stomach. And then QAS, which is Queensland Academy of Sports, came along and they picked me up and I'm sort of like a supported Queensland athlete. And I'm given, you know, some sort of help there to buy equipment that I might need at home. I go and train there. They give me someone to help me be my legs and carry things for me or set things up for me. And then when I came back from Commonwealth Games, then with a medal, that gave funding to the bigger program, which then my coach will come up every couple of weeks now as we lead into Paris, and he'll come and, you know, spend some time with me, that kind of stuff, and we'll train in good conditions. Like, there are some athletes out there that do get a bit of funding, and that's a lot of the Olympians, the top medal ones, you know, the top contenders that are constantly bringing home the bacon, so to say. They're going to be supported and given a lot more grants than anybody else. And I always say to my teammates now, like, the more medals you bring home from all of the other events, not just the big ones, but all the other ones, you know, it's going to say the program's working. You're all actually, you know, you're putting in the hard yards. They're going to want to support you so that you do bring home more medals for Australia, that you do have that representation, that kind of stuff. So you've got to work hard to get that support. And I have certainly worked as hard as I have to be sent over. So I have been lucky to be sent over and not have to sort of really pay for a lot of that myself. It's come out of that funding that what I brought back from Commonwealth Games, which I'm very grateful for. But everything else, like, I don't get annual leave or that kind of stuff, so I have to budget it. I have to work and push myself pretty hard to make sure I've got money that supports me, so when I'm gone for 3 weeks in Paris, I've got that money there to pay for my rent and my bills and all that kind of stuff. So I've got to be very good with budgeting. When I started this sport, I never thought, you know, I'd go to another country and be a victim of crime and be traumatised. As much as I was to protect somebody else, I was assaulted. I never thought I'd return back to the sport, but I thought, you know, I don't want that to be taken away from me. And then getting through that trauma, and having to face it all the time, every time I go away for competition, it's really hard. Mentally, let alone the physical side of things I've got to do as well. And then having my mum pass away from metastatic breast cancer, and then she was on the assisted dying program for Queensland when it was just introduced. Literally just got introduced, she was put on it, and I was her support person. And then having to put her through that and be that person for her and still try and push through with my sport, that was hard. And I think, you know, like, the last things that she said to me was like, don't give up. You know, if you finally found what you're good at. We are resilient as a human race. We can. Like, it's just whether or not you want to and you want it bad enough, I suppose. But it is possible. No matter what you face through in life, you can do it. And any opportunity will present itself when it needs to, you know. And mine presented itself when I was 39 at the time, you know, and then here we are 3 years later, and we're now at the Paralympics, you know, and that's like the biggest, like, sporting event you could possibly think of that anyone would want to get to. And it takes most people, on average, like, it's taken many 3 cycles to try and get to a Paralympics, to try and qualify, but this is my first cycle, so I'm pretty proud of that. So I sit to sit here and reflect upon, despite everything that I've been through, in just the last 3 years, you know, I've got there. I set myself a goal, and I got there. And the driving force behind that, a lot of it was that my mum said not to give up. And you know, and my coach was just like, I see so much in you. You haven't hit your peak in that, you know. And then he, as a coach, hit the pinnacle of any career of a coach was to try and get anyone to a big event. So that was a big driving force to me too, just to not let him down. And everyone else that supports me, I don't want to let you guys down either. I just want to get there so that you can say, like, yeah, I've been on that journey with her, you know. So I didn't want to let anyone down, let alone myself. So I'm really proud. I'm really proud of what we've all achieved together.
Disaster doesn't discriminate in an emergency. Our community and first responders need to be ready to help keep everyone safe. Carers Queensland is working with local agencies and emergency services to ensure people with disability are considered and included. Everyone has a role to play at times of disaster. By people with disability creating their own person-centred emergency preparedness or PSAP plan and sharing their plan with their support network, they can feel more confident to keep safe during emergencies. Find out more, get in touch, or look for events and opportunities coming up near you. Visit our website, caresqld.com.au, or call our inquiries line on 1300 999 636.
Most of the time when we get to go to overseas to other competitions and stuff, we don't get to go and play a lot or go and do anything because we're training, we're eating, we're resting, we're training, we're eating, we're resting. We might get one day to play. But I'm excited that we might be able to have a little bit of a look because we're actually staying out of the village, my coach and I. We're going north of Paris along a beach area. And so I get to go and get be close to where I feel very comforted is near water, you know, living on the bay at Brisbane and then my friends living on the Gold Coast. I could get to be near water and that kind of stuff. That just makes me spiritually very much connected and sort of calm and stuff. So I'm glad that we get to do that in Paris. Oh, you never know what's going to happen. You never know what's going to happen. But sometimes you're going to sit there and realistically look at it and go, you know, as much as I would love to be on that podium, it might happen. You never know. Anything can happen. I'm just going to make sure I'm there to beat my last score. Like, it's always me against me. I'm always wanting to better myself. Like this year, if I look at it from a big picture, I've already done 3 competitions this year, one on the Gold Coast, then over in Egypt and then Georgia. And each time I've competed, I've put more weight on the bar. I've actually had a better PB every time I've gone along and I've broken my own record 4 times already this year. So that in itself is a big achievement for me. And if I can continue to keep doing that at Paris, you know, I'm happy. I'm very happy to keep beating myself. That says my progression is still going up. I definitely want to probably try and hit around 145. That's where I'm hoping I'll end up. Yeah, we'll see how we go.
After working hard and demonstrating enormous dedication and aptitude for the sport of powerlifting, Hani now represents Australia on the world stage and has this advice for aspiring para-athletes.
Just don't give up on the dream. Like, we all... at a young age, we watch the Olympics, like when we're 10, 15, around that sort of age. We watch the Olympics, we watch the Paralympics, and you watch people come out on that opening ceremony. When you watch that, it and what you feel at that point in time is exactly what it feels like when you're actually at the opening ceremony. The energy and the excitement and the emotion, it's so incredible, and it's something that is definitely worth working towards. It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and we only have one life. So if you've got a superpower, it's going to take a long time sometimes for some people to find their superpower. Sometimes it's going to be a short time. Never give up on it. It could be like crocheting, like the world longest blanket. It could be anything from like building the biggest Lego tower house. Whatever it is, find out what that superpower is going to be. Never let up, never give up on yourself. It's going to be hard, and anything that's worth, you know, working towards that you love and you're passionate about, it's worth it at the end of the day. Just keep going at it, and you're just going to continue to keep reflecting on how proud you're going to be, the journey that you take on your own merit. So like that's you know, I'm 41. I've managed to get there 3 years. You know, any opportunity is going to present itself at any time. So always keep chasing it. Chase a goal. Chase all the goals.
And that was 41-year-old Hani Watson from Brisbane, who will compete in para powerlifting in this year's Paralympics in Paris. If you'd like to follow Hani's journey, visit the links in the episode transcript. And for more stories from our Queensland Paralympians, tune in to Choice and Control for more powerful podcasts. Thanks for joining us at Choice and Control, a Carers Queensland podcast. If you've enjoyed this podcast episode, please take a moment to leave a rating and review and share it with your community. For more information about the National Disability Insurance Scheme or Carers Queensland, contact us online at www.carersqld.com.au or call us on 1300 999 636 or head to Facebook and look for Carers Queensland NDIS.